From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
A story I wrote recently for my New York Times column took me on a fascinating deep dive into the world of radicchio and put me back in touch with today's guest, organic seed farmer Brian Campbell of Uprising Seeds. Radicchio, with its long heritage in northern Italy, isn't the only crop with Italian roots that the Uprising team is crazy about. So today we're going to meet leaf broccoli and cardoon and some traditional Italian beans and beets too that would be just as at home in your vegetable garden. So more in a minute, but first these messages.
Programming and underwriting support from Brushwood Nursery. For more than 20 years, Brushwood Nursery has shipped the finest selection of clematis and other vines all over the United States with full gallon-sized plant and free shipping. Their website is full of beautiful pictures and information on growing clematis. BrushwoodNursery.com. Programming and underwriting support from Garden Tool Company. Garden Tool Company's wide selection of heirloom quality tools for your gardening passion is backed by outstanding customer service, fast shipping, and ongoing support. GardenToolCompany.com.
Brian Campbell, with his partner Christine Goldberg, owns Uprising Seeds just north of Bellingham, Washington, which was the state's first certified organic seed company and features an assortment of exceptional vegetables and flowers. This year, they added the new Gusto Italiano project to their lineup, a collection of radicchios and brassicas straight from Italy, and we'll talk about some of those selections and more. Hi, Brian. How are you?
Good morning, Margaret. I'm doing great. Nice to talk to you again.
Before we start, I just wanted to ask, how's it out there in your neck of the woods? I've been worrying, especially about all my Western farming and gardening friends in this new normal of climate and weather, all this madness. How are you guys?
We're faring pretty well. We've had a nice spring. We've got plenty of water up where we are, so we're out of the drought-stricken regions a little further south. But so far, so good.
Glad to hear that. So whether farmers or gardeners, how we choose what we grow and get obsessed with, you know, there's lots of different possibilities and lots of different influences out there to speak to us and tempt us. And I love reading the variety descriptions on the Uprising Seeds website, because you often also speak in those descriptions to like the traditions or the cultures of the seeds that you offer, where they come from, that spoke to you. So like the new Gusto Italiano project. So want to tell us what that is?
Yeah, sure. So one of the things that has always attracted us to seed work is these varieties with rich histories and with deep connections to tradition and place. And for us, one of the most important things in working with seeds is to use them as a way to be a conduit of connectivity between people and culture and place. And that's what kind of motivated us with this project, the Gusto Italiano. We've always been attracted to the food and agriculture tradition of Italy, probably because that's the first place we really experienced a rich, intact food culture as adults. You know, these regional specialties that are really woven into the fabric of the culture of these places, and experiencing that and wanting to share that with people as a way to allow people to connect with traditions outside their own, or to find people who are maybe from those regions now living abroad in the United States, and providing a way for them to connect to their cultural heritage has always been really richly satisfying to us.
Right. So this is a collaboration, the Gusto Italiano project is a collaboration with Culinary Breeding Network and Smarteats.bio, an Italian seed breeding company. It's all organic seed. It's very interesting. And what drew me to contact you to write about it was the radicchio, which I will confess I've never grown. But now, because it's really like it likes to come to fruition in the fall and winter, it's like a crop that we sow now and plant now into maybe early August or something, depending on where we are in the north. So radicchio, yeah?
Yeah, We exist in a pocket of radicchio fanatics out here in the Pacific Northwest that is trying to spread the gospel of this crop as a, you know, we hope to build it as something that is a common crop to be found throughout, probably especially the northern United States where it's best suited, but it's such a lovely seasonal crop for the fall that and we love the flavor profile it brings and the kind of seasonally appropriate flavors that it pairs with in the fall that we're really just trying to spread the word about it and build that tradition here like it is over in the north of Italy.
So what kind of blew me away when we, you know, again, when I first contacted you and started doing the research for the story, the time story, like I didn't even know, you know, because I have farmer friends and they might grow two kinds or three kinds or sometimes just one kind. But most people only know the one from the supermarket, if they know any. And as you told me, that's the one that's sometimes sort of shredded up into those bagged baby salad mixes. It's dark purpley red in color. And it kind of looks like a small head of cabbage, but that's just one type. And it's this chicory. It's a cultivated kind of chicory that, but it has all these diverse types. And that was what's so amazing. It's so, they're so beautiful. I didn't know most of them.
Yeah, they are so beautiful. And some of them, you know, often they're described as, you know, in terms of flowers, like the Castelfranco types, they often call the tulip of winter. And there's another type from Gorizia that's called the rose of winter. So they're these beautiful forms, real diversity of shapes, a diversity of, you know, to the extent that they are bitter, which is one of the factors that tends to turn people off, is not knowing how to manage that flavor that is sort of a new flavor for a lot of people in American cuisine culture. But, you know, rather than that being a deterrent, we just think of it as something like anything that you need to learn how to prepare, how to manage. And like you said, the one that most people are familiar with, the Chioggia types that look like the cabbages, you know, that's often a cooked type in Italy and not one that's eaten raw, where the bitter flavors might come more to the foreground. It's something that will be, you know, maybe grilled or sautéed, where the sweetness might come out of it, or sweeter elements might be added to tame the bitterness to bring it more into balance. So how people are exposed to it, I think, often shapes their impressions of it. And I think teaching people the culinary traditions and aspects, as well as, you know, exposing to them a diversity of shapes and flavors, is also a real important component of it.
And for gardeners or farmers, but mostly listening to the program are gardeners, as you taught me, it's really important to choose the right ones to start with, and because some of them can be like 60-day-ish from the time of transplant to harvest approximately, and some can be like double that. And that's those ones that are double that are a lot harder in a lot of growing zones, you know. So choosing the right ones to get started with, right?
Sure. And that's not even necessarily just by type. So if you took, again, that Chioggia type, there are Chioggia varieties that are very short days to maturity, so maybe 60 days to where you'll harvest them, or even less. And there are ones that were, you know, like you said, 110, 120 days to harvest. So I wouldn't say there are types necessarily that are better.
Okay.
But within that, you need to know what your season looks like. And if you're someplace like northern New England, where you have a very severe transition from fall to winter and it gets very, very cold very quickly, then you're going to want to get the earlier maturing varieties. Whereas if you're in our area in the Pacific Northwest, where we have these long, mild transitions to cold winter temperatures, we can grow the much longer season ones.
Mm-hmm. And so you recommend starting them in flats or cell packs or whatever, starting them and transplanting them out like maybe 4 weeks later. So I'd start soon and I'd transplant them out through in July and so forth.
Exactly. And that's probably the most important thing, and the thing that people most commonly get wrong, is that timing is much more important with radicchio Pinocchio than it is most other crops. And since it is a fall crop, you really have to, there is a time of year where you need to plant them, and that time is pretty much the end of June to maybe the first week of July for most of those varieties. So you're shooting to have transplants to put out into the garden by maybe the end of July. And then they'll do that growing through August and into September, and then the heading up really takes that shortening days of fall to really develop those nice tight heads for the heading varieties and to fill in. And again, brassicas, fall brassicas like kales and cabbages, the real cool nights and
yes,
frosting at night is really an important aspect of developing the sweet flavors and really improves the quality of the final product.
Well, I'll give with the transcript of this show, I'm going to give the link to the longer time story, which we really just delved into radicchio. And the reason being that I want to just, there were some other things in the catalog, some are in this new assortment and some otherwise, or that I've seen on your Instagram. Like I've grown leaf broccoli. I call it Spigariello or Spigarello. I don't know how you're supposed to pronounce it, but mm-hmm. You have a different one and it has a great story too. And I don't know if people have tried leaf broccoli, but it's wonderful.
Yeah. So we actually sell two. We do sell the Spigariello, and then the one that's part of the Gusto project is a really localized regional specialty in the Veneto, in that same region that the radicchio comes from, and it's called Filaro de Creazzo, and that is from a village there, and has that similar. People who aren't familiar with leaf broccoli, it doesn't make a head of buds, which is what the broccoli head is, but rather it's eaten more like kale or collards. It's a brassica green. And the Filaro is named such because what's known as fioi, which are these branches, so it branches heavily and makes these stalks of clusters of leaves, and they have just a really delightful flavor, again, especially after frost. They sweeten up and sautéed. They're very tender and delicious, and it's kind of a different brassica flavor profile than you're used to from kales or collards or those things.
Yes, it is, and it's surprising because, you know, again, when the first time I grew it, I didn't know what to expect the flavor would be, but it is distinctive. It's a wonderful thing. And how late can we sow? Can we do another sowing of that for the fall?
I mean, it's less time sensitive than the radicchio is, in that it is a brassica, so it will grow like kale. You can grow it any time of year, but in Italy, it's grown exclusively in the fall, and that's how we grow it here, just because it is those cool nights of fall that really bring out the sweetness and really develop the flavor. So we try to sow it in probably the beginning of July is fine, end of June is fine. We do transplants for that as well. You can direct sow it if that suits how you grow things in your garden, but we're shooting to start harvesting those once the nights start getting a little frosty.
Hard to imagine as we just come into the hot months that we'll ever go there, but
it's hard to think about
there.
This time of year when everyone's still on asparagus and fava beans, but it is really the time that you need to start thinking about that, those fall crops, because it's when you need to start sowing seeds for them.
Right. That one isn't that in the Slow Food Arc of Taste list? Isn't that sort of a... It's a precious thing that isn't widely grown, and I think it could use more people growing it. Is that correct?
It is, yeah. So it is on the Slow Foods Arc of Taste. It's very localized. Our friend Andrea of Smarties grew up, very close to there, and had never even heard of it until a friend of his brought it to his attention. And it's also something that is almost never. It's not a seed that you could buy like in a seed catalog in Italy. A lot of these real regional specialties, they kind of exist outside of a commercial seed world and are just maintained by the growers that grow them. So it is a bit unusual for somebody like Andrea, and that is one of his projects, is collecting these really localized treasures that are likely threatened from an aging out farming population and traditions changing there. One of his projects is to start collecting some of these really regional specialties and working with them in a modern breeding context and selling seeds to try and promote people to keep growing them.
So, yeah, keep them alive. Now, so exactly. Smarties, again, that I mentioned in the beginning, is one of the partners in this Gusto Italiano project, and he's a Northern Italy-based seed breeder. And what's so great is that with all the seed in this project, it's organic seed. And for those people who haven't listened to me say this a million times before, it's so important that we support organic seed. But also, like any living organism, seed is, over the generations, is adapted to the conditions that it experiences. And so if you're an organic gardener and you're not going to feed this stuff fertilizer and spray it when a pest shows up, organic seed is going to be your best seed, I think, to grow, right? It's appropriate for an organic garden. So it's great that you have this available. I don't see as much organic radicchio, for instance, as you guys have. You have, I think, 15 kinds or something now?
It's very, very unusual. He's really the first person that we've seen in Italy working on this scale in organic systems. So we hope to see more of that to come, and hopefully this is just the tip of it. But it does feel like an unusual thing at this point.
Yeah. So he's
and it's really exciting. We're thrilled about it. So.
Yeah. So he's based in Chioggia, yes.
Yep.
And that is the name of that red cabbage look-alike radicchio, right? That type
sure. Is
Chioggia, and then you have a beet with the same name. And that was one of the first things I ever got from you years ago, I think, because I loved that beet. It's that beet that people may recognize that has the rings of white and red inside when you cut it open. But it was sort of inconsistent, unreliable where I had gotten it before. It was never quite the same. And I saw that you were working on it. And that was one of the first things I ever talked to you about years ago. So tell us about that beet.
Yeah, I remember that. We did a whole talk about beets.
So
that was one of, a lot of these older varieties that are open pollinated, they really require a lot of work to keep. They tend to drift if you're not being really active and intentional in your seed selecting and your seed work. And that was one that we had seen drift, like you said, to be pretty irregular and not very uniform. So that was one of our very early projects to try and tighten the genetics up on that, so it was a more uniform crop that was better for both commercial farmers and gardeners. And that comes from the same region. We don't hear a lot about that one in Italy, other than it being named for that town. Mm-hmm. But I think it is originally does come from that place. And it's also known as the candy cane beet for people who might not have the association with the name, with the red and white stripes.
Yeah. So the other day, or I don't know, last week, whenever it was, on Instagram, and I love your Instagram feed. I don't know who writes it, which one of you writes it, but it's great, and it's funny, too, a lot of times. It has a lot of attitude, which I love. So you showed a plate of what looked like little cutlets, breaded and fried, and it was cardoon, which I
indeed,
and I was like, what, who's growing cardoon and eating it? This is fabulous. So tell us about cardoon.
Yeah, I have my soap boxes, and that's one of them. So if I feel like one of my goals in life is to popularize cardoons in North America, and I feel like it's one of my favorite foods of fall. For people who love artichokes, it's very closely related, probably a slightly wilder version. It doesn't make those big buds, which are the artichokes on the artichoke plant, but instead it's grown for the stems. And it's a bit of a process to produce in that it requires one final step before you can harvest it, which is wrapping the bases of the stems, probably the bottom, 2.5 feet, to exclude light, which is that needs to be done to tame the bitterness, which if it's not done, tends to be pretty unpleasantly bitter. But what you get after that time, after you blanch it, maybe for about a month before harvesting, you get this huge, I describe it as celery on steroids. So it's a pretty big reward for the work. You can get a couple pound clump of stems, and it has the flavor of artichoke hearts. And if it's done well, it has a really smooth texture when it's cooked. And the way we like to prepare them is kind of a Roman style, or lots of different parts of Italy have different versions, which is you boil it in, kind of poach it in wine, white wine and water, and then cook it until it's soft, and then bread it and fry it, and it's just this delicious kind of creamy, crunchy artichoke-flavored dish that we just love. It's probably one of my favorite things to eat in the fall.
It's interesting. It's also a beautiful plant. I think. I mean, I haven't seen the one.
Yeah, they're exquisitely beautiful. They're huge.
Kind of,
I mean, they grow to 3-4 feet. For people who have grown artichokes, they look very similar, if not a little bit bigger. And some people grow them just as ornamentals. They do flower similarly to artichokes. They're a little smaller and rounder, the buds, but these beautiful big purple kind of showy flowers that pollinators love and florists love, actually. So,
yeah, it's a great one. So in the we have several minutes left, and I want to make sure that I didn't know that I was one of these until I read it on the description of your bean sampler. It says that in Italy, Tuscans are sometimes referred to as mangiafagioli, the bean eaters. And I eat beans every day, as I have for about 100 years.
Uh-huh.
So apparently I'm a mangiafagioli.
Sure. Yeah, and I'm not... The term might be a little derogatory. I'm not sure,
but
there is a long history in Tuscany of cultivating and eating beans as sort of a staple part of the cuisine. And like you, we eat a lot of beans in our diet. We have been a vegetarian family for just about forever, so legumes feature pretty prominently. And again, we just fell in love with regional diversity kind of on display when we visited, and from what we've learned. There's a lot of varieties that are bordered on the Italian arc of taste that are very localized in production and treasured both locally and throughout Italy and beyond. And so we kind of have made it one of the points of our work with seeds of collecting a lot of these varieties and growing them and offering them. So we do offer a mix of a collection of 4 packets of different varieties that are specific to different parts of Tuscany, and really enjoy growing and sharing and eating them.
Well, and one of the 4 is called Purgatory. So, I mean, who could resist trying to grow the purgatory bean?
Yeah, sure.
It's great. Yeah, it's great. Well, like we said at the beginning, so many stories and so much culture and history comes with these varieties that you're attracted to, which is so great. So, Brian, I mean, I just always enjoy speaking, and I'm so glad to learn more about some of these, especially the cardoon, which, again, as you said, it's beautiful. So even if we fail at the excluding the light thing and don't get the 2 pounds of deliciousness, we can still enjoy the beauty, right? So
for sure. I might definitely. And in a lot of parts of the country, they perennialize, too. So it's something that, you know, you can plant once and enjoy for many seasons.
Oh, amazing. Well, I'm glad to speak to you. I'm going to actually buy a couple of gift certificates to go with as a giveaway during the with the transcript of the show, because I'm so excited about some of the things you're doing. So hopefully some listeners will be excited too, and I'll have a little giveaway. So thank you again for making time. I know this is a busy, busy, busy time of year. So thanks, and it's good to speak to you.
Yeah, you too, Margaret. Thanks. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Programming and underwriting support from Garden Tool Company. Garden Tool Company's wide selection of heirloom quality tools for your gardening passion is backed by outstanding customer service, fast shipping, and ongoing support. GardenToolCompany.com. Programming and underwriting support from Brushwood Nursery. For more than 20 years, Brushwood Nursery has shipped the finest selection of clematis and other vines all over the United States with full gallon-sized plant and free shipping. Their website is full of beautiful pictures and information on growing clematis. Brushwoodnursery.com.
And it's good to speak to all the rest of you again, too. And don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Stitcher or iTunes or Spotify. And you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com or on Facebook and on Instagram as @awaytogarden. And happy gardening meantime.
Away to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.